come to order at 6:05. I'll have a roll call vote, please.
Dan Marco, counselor.
Counselor Del McAfee.
Counselor Don Brennan.
Counselor Jim Martinez.
And Mayor Ken Molnix. I'd like to have the Pledge of Allegiance at this time, and Doug.
Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any added agenda items, City Manager?
Yep, we want to add a proclamation for the flags on Saturday in honor of our firemen. Mm-hmm. So we can pass that down if you want. Bring one back. And then if we can maybe just get that, do that at the beginning.
We will add that at 4A.
I thought, since you're going to have so many people from out of town on Saturday here, from all over, fire departments and the folks, and having the flags around town, that there's only four or five, but fire departments down, but I thought on Saturday, the day of it, would be nice if the city kind of did a proclamation, and maybe the mayor, you could read it if you want.
All right. Proclamation, City of Lapine. Relating to a proclamation that the flag of the United States and the flag of the State of Oregon be flown at half-staff as a mark of respect for Captain James Palmer of the Lapine Rural Fire Protection District. Whereas, on May the 13th, Captain James Palmer was in a car accident on U.S. Highway 97 and State Park Rec Road, where he passed away at the scene, and whereas Captain James Palmer provided faithful and honorable service to the people of the City of Lapine and the people of Deschutes County, and whereas the people of Lapine mourn the death of Captain James Palmer, and whereas Captain James Palmer's life will be honored on Saturday, May the 21st, 2011 in Lapine, Oregon. Now therefore, I, Mayor Ken Molnix, and the Lapine City Council do hereby request that the flag of the United States and the flag of the State of Oregon shall be flown at half-staff at all buildings, grounds, and public places in the City of Lapine equipped with such flags beginning at sunrise on Saturday, May the 21st, 2011, and ending at sundown on that day.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous?
Okay, so then we'll get that out, and I'll have Patty call a couple of, like, the post office and the library, and then we'll PDF, and maybe you could send it out to, and I think it just also tells other people if they have a flag they can put out at their house that day on Saturday, just for his service.
Is it appropriate, you know, some flags that, you know, individuals have, you can't put it half-mast, it's just fly the flag.
Yes.
Yeah.
2:00 p.m. at the high school, yeah. Memorial Church.
2:00.
And for anyone that's interested, it'd be also nice to line the streets with your, you know, individually, if you have a flag and you want to watch the procession that's going to be taking place, because that'll take place from the fire station to Barron's Memorial Chapel to the high school, so anywhere along Huntington Road, come out and fly your flag.
I'd also make the comment at this time that the City of Lapine, Friends of Lapine Cleanup Day has been partially canceled. That portion of the city where all of these events will take place has been postponed until sometime in June, and there will be another part that Wickiup Junction and South City here will actually take place. I'd like to item number 5 is continuation of the public hearing, ordinance 2011-03, an ordinance accepting and adopting the procedures, land division, zoning, signs, and lighting ordinances, and mitigation concept format.
Mr. Mayor, at the last hearing on this topic, you had continued the hearing to this date. So the hearing is still open.
Okay.
And you left it open for all topics. You might want to scan the room to see how many people want to testify.
how many people in the room would like to testify and make comment? We'll have a 3-minute limit on everybody. And you ready to take public comment?
What I would do is a little staff report to tell you about the changes right. that have occurred all since right. the last time.
Please.
You had asked us to go through and do two things. Make sure that we had incorporated the changes that we were aware of at the last meeting and those that had come in, and make sure everything was prepared in advance for you. And we did that, and we gave you almost a full week in advance with those documents. There have only been a few changes that have occurred since then, and when we talk about the sign ordinance, I'll go through that one change with you. But for the most part, when you look at the codes, you'll see that they've been updated. The pagination is correct. The typos have been removed. The legislative format has been inserted so that you can follow your way along. And table of contents have been inserted, as well as quickie charts, most notably in the sign code, quickie charts, so that people can find good information quickly without having to thumb through a large document. And those kinds of improvements go through all of the codes. The city attorney has gone through and, from a legal perspective, analyzed the legal requirements for each of the codes. And I spent, I guess, about 2 hours with Sharon Smith and went through various things with her. So typos, references, small issues were taken care of through our city attorney as well. And there was James prepared findings, which are the descriptions. It's your exhibit A that goes to your ordinance, and this describes why we meet all of the state and local requirements for planning purposes. And it's kind of a verbal description of how we meet all of the applicable rules and regulations. So that becomes exhibit A to the ordinance. The rest of the things before you, like the zoning ordinance, the lighting code, the sign code, they're all labeled as exhibits. And your map, which is our current comprehensive plan map, is exhibit E. It's oversized, so we didn't send a big giant one to you because it would have wiped out your computers, and it's very costly to produce. So it's the same map that you have. We'll attach this exhibit E to the ordinance itself. In the sign code, we've made substantial changes with the addition of graphics that help people see what a projecting sign is, help them understand how various signs are measured, what's a menu board sign. All of the things that you had talked about last time are the product of your discussions with the public and the public's testimony that was brought forward. We sat down with Carlson Sign Company and Renee Kapp, and we incorporated information from other sign professionals. And we cleaned up the code in taking out extraneous processes, making more signs exempt, so that for the individual homeowner, more signs are allowed to them in a normal course. They don't have to come in to get a permit for signs that are typically part of a residential environment. So when you go through the sign code, I think it reads easier. It's easier to understand, and it's simplified. Not too many changes in the zoning ordinance other than what you had described last time. Very minor typos and things like that. In the lighting code, we cleaned up the chart and made sure that we had made correct references, double-checking all of the technical details, because that's a highly technical ordinance. Procedures ordinance was pretty good. We didn't have too much to do there. Land division, just general cleanup. And SDC mitigation, of course, since that's not an ordinance, it's a resolution before you tonight, so that's connected to the resolution in your packet. So we feel pretty comfortable about the sign code, but just yesterday, Renee Kapp called me, and we went over a few things, and she said, Deborah, I'd like to see some sort of variance or exception process put into the sign code. Excellent point. We missed that. So we have before you tonight And I'll just, instead of copying the whole code for you, I'll just give you the section. And it's an exception process, and what that allows a citizen to do is to ask the Planning Commission for relief should there be a need to have extra flexibility as it comes to interpreting the sign code. We think that's a really good thing to have in there, and essentially there are just very simple criteria that granting the special exception is in the interest of the public at large and would not be contrary to the general objectives of the sign code and adopted land use plans. The signage is located on private property and shall adhere to the ordinance specifications as it pertains to the clear vision triangle, so it's a public health and safety issue. The Planning Commission may attach additional requirements necessary to maintain the intent and purpose of the sign ordinance. An application for a sign exception shall be scheduled for review by the Planning Commission within 40 days of receipt of the application. And then notice will be given to the property owners within 100 feet of where this sign variance or special exception would be placed. So the public's aware of something that's occurring, and the Planning Commission has very basic criteria to go through. It's very straightforward. So your Exhibit F would be modified by the insertion of this language. That concludes our staff.
Okay. Then we'll take public comment, and at this time, state your name and are you a city resident?
My name is Bob Cox. I'm not a city resident, but I am your tenant. Unusual position that way, perhaps. I have some pictures that I've brought for everybody, just because I'd like to communicate effectively. So we can go with this. On page 36 of the sign code, there's a section talks about roof signs. And so my concern is the interpretation of the paragraph. It says something about reasonable. The whole would be reasonable. So what I'm proposing, what I would like to see, I've argued with the county for 4 years, and I think I've been pretty patient waiting for this process, actually for this day. So on the front cover there, first picture, what I would like to see is my Edward Jones sign on the highway side of the building. The county said that the front of your building is 6th Street. No, it's the highway side of the building. Even the real estate agent thought so, because you can see this sign right there in the center, front and center. So everybody would, I think, agree with the highway. But anyway, I'd like to have my sign there, about a foot or so, foot or two or whatever, above the gutter. The reason I would suggest that's reasonable is because if you put it down as a wall sign down below the gutter, I would literally hit my head on it. It's a very low eave there, and standing in the flower bed, I can actually touch, standing flat-footed, I can actually touch the gutter with my fingers. So to have a wall sign, I literally hit my head on that. The county doesn't like any of this idea. So I said, well, why don't we just slide it up the gutter, or just up from the gutter a couple of feet, like as is shown there on the picture. Mm-hmm. A couple of feet or thereabouts above the gutter. That's technically a roof sign. So my question, I guess, is going to be, is that reasonable? Seems reasonable to me. On page 36 of the sign code, it says, well, if it's reasonable, we can't accommodate it some other way, then we'll allow it. And so I'm thinking,
may I address him?
Please.
The one thing, we're in a transition period. Mm-hmm. So any sign that's applied for until the city has full jurisdiction over implementing the sign code, you'd have to go through the county.
Right, and that's why I've avoided them, because they don't want anything to do with signs on the highway or signs on the roof.
Right.
So they shut me down.
If this code was... if we have full jurisdiction over this code as adopted tomorrow, then we would interpret this to be a situation where you could get a roof sign. If there was a staff person, for example, who disagreed and said, no, I don't agree, you would still have the ability through the exceptions process to approach the body of the Planning Commission and state your case. And so we think there are two avenues for you. One, I think it's reasonable to say it's reasonable to have a roof sign. But if there was an interpretation that didn't make sense to you and you wanted greater relief, you'd have the exceptions process to go through. And what you pointed out here is a good-looking sign. It makes that building look good. So I'm not seeing anything unusual from an aesthetic standpoint, land use standpoint, a safety standpoint. You'd have to meet all the requirements of the building code, sure, which you would have no problem doing.
Great.
Does that help?
A lot.
Okay.
I have a question. Bob, had you thought about a monument sign there?
There is a monument sign. It's about 2 square feet, and since you even asked the question, it's in that picture.
Well, right here. Yes. Yeah. No, I see that one, but I was really speaking to an individual monument sign.
No. No, that's it.
Okay.
What you see there, and it's, you know, in the summertime the weeds grow up and whatnot, and it's just really small.
Okay.
And so, and I want to say, good-looking signage is a big deal. We want a good-looking town. I'm certainly not. I certainly would not want to propose anything ugly. And I don't think that is. I think what I'm hoping for there is what I'm suggesting isn't.
All right. Thank you.
Robin Marisol. No, I'm not a resident, but I do own 2 commercial buildings in town and have a business. We do signs and banners, but actually, I want to talk to you tonight as a professional business advisor and someone who teaches marketing and business planning and that. And my concern for the city of Lapine is that we've been kind of handcuffed economically by situations that we really couldn't control over the last 10 years. We're the only city in Central Oregon that really hasn't grown economically during the boom, and that's just a crying shame. I just beg you guys not to create a sign code that handcuffs us even further, and I applaud the efforts moving forward with a sign code, because heaven knows we need it, and it's to all of our benefits to have a much prettier town. That aside, a couple of things is that it needs to be understandable. It's much better now than it was 2 weeks ago when we looked at it before. Something that needs to be thought about is that this little town does not have regular media. We don't have a daily newspaper. We really don't have a, you know, in practicality, we don't have a radio station. We don't have a TV station. The bulletin doesn't, you know, do anything for Lapine. The only way our community really has to communicate to each other is through signage. So if we make the sign code too restrictive, it's going to hinder our ability to communicate. And one of the things that, in looking at the ordinance, the way it's written, only one banner is allowed per event for the town. Well, that immediately puts Frontier Days, the rodeo, and almost every other event out of compliance with that code right off the bat, because we need banners front at north end, south end, you know, middle of the town, wherever, if we're having a large event. One banner is not enough. So that, you know, that was an issue. The church signs in residential, and I understand we don't want, you know, huge signs, but if you think about a 4x4 sign or 16 square foot sign, which is a 4x4 is not much bigger than this piece of paper here, a little bit wider, okay, every church right now that we have would not be in compliance. If you look at the Lutheran church sign, if you look at Crescent Creek Church's sign, if you look at Cascade Bible, none of those would comply with what I understand the ordinance to be, which would be a 16 square foot sign in a residential area. So, I mean, here we are, we're creating an ordinance that's not appropriate for what's already there, and I don't think that those signs are particularly large. If you look at the Lutheran sign, you look at the Crescent Creek sign, they're not huge signs. They're a normal, aesthetically pleasing size for a sign for the churches. Awnings. The way I read the ordinance was that there's only one awning per side per building. Well, let's just take the John C. Johnson building as an example. If you decided that you were going to, you know, the park department was going to rent out more offices and wanted 2 awnings, you know, on the 2 different entries on the south side of John C. Johnson, that wouldn't be allowed under the ordinance. So there's some things that still need to be looked at and maybe refined for our little community before we quite go forward. And in that vein, what I'd love to see is some education. If Deborah would be willing to come and educate Some of the business owners, the Chamber of Commerce breakfast is Friday morning. We would love to have her there. It would be an opportunity for the businesses to get an understanding of what the sign ordinance is going to be. There's a 20-minute slate on the schedule that I was supposed to speak, and I'm willing to yield that in the interest of moving this process forward, but educating our business owners. One of the things with business owners not being educated is not all businesses are going to buy their signs locally. A lot of them buy their banners and stuff off the internet. They're not going to know that they're not in compliance until they've already spent the money. And that's not fair. I mean, it needs to be readable enough that they understand, and the education needs to be out there. And so I would urge you, if there's any way possible, to come and educate us. You know, give us a PowerPoint presentation and maybe allow for some questions and answers to clarify so that people understand what, you know, what we're doing and really get transparency and buy-in from the business community.
Could I respond to something?
Sure.
Okay. On the church signs, there is an... if you look at the back of the code, there's a certain number of years that people had to...
I understand the years. What I was speaking to specifically is those signs are not ugly signs. They're not an unusually large sign now. Why would we, 5 years from now, hinder them? I mean, why would we cut their size of sign down, or another church that opens in a residential area, to a sign that when you, is so small when you're driving by, it would be inappropriate for the size of building, even, that could be built there as a church.
Okay, and the other thing on banners, did you have a suggestion other than just the one banner on the property where the event's occurring? You want... two, that would be, or how many?
I would say that maybe a maximum of four. And here's why, is that when we have an event like Frontier Days, that's drawing tourism in. We need a banner at the south end of town. We need a banner at the north end of town. We need a directional banner in the middle of town. We need a banner on the property. Some other directional signs and stuff. Those are all part of our community events. And if we hinder that, we hinder tourism, we hinder our community, being able to hold those kind of events. Relay for Life needs more than one banner. The rodeo needs one more than one banner. A car club, car shows. So,
And the county code, even though they may not be enforcing it, a lot of these restrictions aren't much different than what's in the county code. So there may have been inherent flexibility because of non-enforcement in the past. Mm-hmm. But I want to hear from you, as an expert in these fields, what you think is appropriate, because that way the council can decide tonight whether to make those changes.
Well, and that's why I'm saying that it would be wise to get some education and some input from some other organizations, because I can't speak for Frontier Days, really. I mean, I am, because they're dear to my heart, but they might have a very different feel for that. I mean, maybe they need six. I don't know. I mean, I would simply say that one is way too few. I mean, and that's not even reasonable.
I wish we could do it, but we can't write a code for every situation.
I understand that.
Which is why we have the exceptions process, which is a great way to deal with unique things. For example, in the awning situation, you don't want to say that... you know, X number of awnings are allowed, and then have that be abused if it's not appropriate. So there are some things that, in the eye of the beholder, are best reviewed by the Planning Commission because they're unique or the code doesn't quite fit the situation. Given that, I would say, as a staff person, the exceptions process works for awnings. Education, absolutely. We'd be happy to do that. I can't do it Friday because that's too short a notice for my schedule. But I'd be happy to provide that. And the one thing that we had talked about at the last meeting was this gap period. Mm-hmm. That there are requirements through the grant that funded this work to have drafts done and adopted to make progress. But there's a gap period that occurs where the city can continue to make changes and refinements until the city takes over jurisdiction. We would expect a new city to start with something and then make refinements and give tasks to the Planning Commission on certain issues. and you've brought up a few. Through the education process, there may be other things that come out from the community as they get more familiar with an adopted code.
What my concern is that I don't want to see an ordinance start out so restrictive that everything has to be taken to the planning board for an exception. When common sense says that some of these things could be easily changed to something that's a little bit less restrictive and create a whole lot less havoc down the road for people having to come to the planning board and wasting their time and wasting the planning board's time for something that makes common sense today.
And in the gap period, you would be before the planning commission anyway for any changes, because any changes to codes don't start at the top. They start with the planning commission in any event. So the items that you mentioned today, I think four banners per event is probably an appropriate thing. There is no restriction on size in the county code, but they just allow the one. So awnings, real strong feelings about that from staff, that what we have in there is appropriate, and if there were a need for additional awnings, there's a process to deal with that. No problem with education, and on the church signs, on that one, I think during the gap period, that would be a good way to pull those people in, property owners who have churches on their property, and talk with them and see what they think is appropriate, and then bring that information back to the Planning Commission for a revision after we have more in-depth detail from the people who actually have to use the sign. That's what I would do and recommend to the City Council.
I would just ask that, you know, some common sense come into play and some thoughtfulness about our businesses in this community and the need to communicate within ourselves.
Are they cap all these signs? I'm not. I don't live here. I live in Crescent, but I have a sign company. And I have to say that I really want the signs to be fair to all the businesses. And I think that the exceptions, I'm going to tell you why we talked about exceptions yesterday, Deborah and I, because when a street is raised so that you don't slide off it in the snow, then the height of a monument sign next to that would probably not be high enough. So that would be a time when you would ask for an exception. And then you would say, could we either raise landscaping and then go from the grade? My daughter, the structural engineer, won't do anything until I'm right. You know, uniform building code is her Bible. So that was one of the exceptions. Another one is whether or not you're considering a primary elevation or a secondary elevation to determine the square footage that you'd get the 8% of. So that's something that is going to be unique in everyone's building. And as to the gap period, I'm concerned because there will be no activity applying for signs. So how will there be communication with the Planning Commission as to what problems we're looking at? We're still going through the county. So I second, and we're very glad that Robin brought up inviting Deborah to the chamber breakfast. That would be wonderful. And 20 minutes probably wouldn't even be enough. But I will also offer to continue to write articles in the Eagle. There again, we don't have a daily newspaper. The Eagle, I've been writing in for a year now, and I would love to take one section at a time, go over it with Deborah, put in some graphics, and explain what each part means, because it's in legal language for a reason. We can't reinvent the wheel and do this just totally for La Pine, but let's get communication going. And so that's what I would like to do. Finally, in regards to the churches, the scale of this town where the churches are is huge. We're not talking lots 65 feet. We're talking 1 acre, 1.5 acres, 5 acres. And I truly feel that the churches do not have a big enough sign if we're limited to 16 square feet. We have a tremendous amount of distance for people to read them. We have curved roads. There again, we have raised roads. So the signs, if we were to average the signs that Robin I've already forgotten what they were, but if we average the church signs that Robin just listed and made that the code, I would like to see that. Because the residential district, there again, the scale of our residential district is acre. Not 35, 65, 80 feet.
Yeah, and everybody should realize that it's not just a monument sign that would be allowed for churches. They can have wall signs and a host of signs that are allowed on the chart for that particular use. So they wouldn't be limited just to one sign. But I think the churches would be a good group to poll, and during the gap period we could have additional information come from them, and if it looks like they all agree on 200 square feet per ground mounted sign, we bring that to the Planning Commission and then back to the Council on that specific issue.
I think those are some very good suggestions. For Kelsey, it's Ken.
Ken, can I say one more thing?
Please.
Thank you very much. In order to make Lapointe a really beautiful city and get rid of clutter and have uniformity, that's going to make it an attractive, tourist-producing place. At Sisters, everything is themed Old West. That becomes a wonderful way to draw people, and it's worked. So if we have this uniform sign code and uniform sizes and a really wonderful communication system, I think that when things come up that are inappropriate, we'll find ways to handle them. And I'm honored to be able to be a part of this.
Thank you. Are there any further public comments?
Vicki Jackson, 17346 Main Court. I'm Prudential Northwest Real Estate Broker. I want to echo what Robin and Renee said. Also, if right now all the signs are out of compliance, I would tend to think that you might want to write your code a little to the lenient side, not so that, you know, like along Gordy's you want all those huge signs, whatever, but more lenient, not only for the economic thing, but so just your residents now, your business owners, wouldn't have to change their signs. I don't know if that's something you're thinking about doing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything else from staff?
No, not at this time.
Rick? Okay.
No.
Okay.
You don't have to read it. You don't have to read it in record. You have a copy. You want to comment on it.
Okay.
But, you know, the sign ordinance, I mean, if I know what Deborah, it appears, is trying to say is you kind of adopt it, and then, because how long do we have before most of those are enforced?
About a year.
But the big lit signs, isn't it?
Probably a year for a jurisdiction transfer, and then 5 years beyond that.
Right.
For compliance.
So, in other words, you take the churches. They don't have to do anything for 5 or 6 years. So what you would do is maybe you literally gather the churches and you talk about what's appropriate. Maybe it needs to go to 150 feet. And there's six churches, and you kind of solve that problem in the next 6 years. Rather than trying to solve them all before you adopt anything, or it'll never get adopted. Because what you heard is, I mean, Mr. Cox, he loves kind of left. Everyone wants to find clean. However, he wants a roof sign. Let's fix it right and have a roof sign. You know, someone else wants six banners. Gordy loves every sign he has. So, how are you going to make it look like Sisters if you don't change anything? And so, people are kind of, to a degree, a little bit, and I said at the first meeting, this is the toughest ordinance you will pass. It is controversial everywhere.
Yep.
And business, the guy that's out of compliance isn't going to like what you're adopting. A person in compliance will. It's that basic. So you have to decide where you start, and then you start working with them, and that's why you got 5 years. And this thing may be changed 2 or 3 times or little changes to it. Then this planning commission can take them in little bites. They can have a discussion on church signs. And they can spend 2 hours talking and come up with a recommendation to you. And then maybe it's banners. How many banners? Maybe they can come up with some wording that literally takes care of community-wide events that have a community of interest broader than a guy's own garage sale. Because then pretty soon I'm a garage sale and I need to have 6 banners. So, you know, it's all of that. So I think that's what, on one hand, get it solved all before you adopt it. I think what these guys are saying is the template's kind of within an acceptable range, adopt it, and then we'll take it from there.
If I could, I believe that's absolutely correct. I believe there's some good points made here this evening. I believe those are some of the kinds of issues that can be resolved in this gap period. I think that everything the city manager has spoken to is reality, in that you've got the yeses and nos on the sign ordinance. I believe we are at a state with of this sign ordinance that we could move forward. I think the addition of this variance language,
exceptions
language, was more than appropriate, and it was well that it was brought up.
Yeah.
I do believe that the chamber has a humongous responsibility here, because they do represent the business community. I believe the willingness of the staff to come to the breakfast and start an education process is creditable and something that needs to be done.
You tried to get, because it seemed at one point, have you sent out emails to your groups when they've had meetings on the signs, or have you not?
For these here,
the planning commission, when they were working on signs.
No, we didn't until we had the public hearings.
Okay, because it's just, how we get to the businesses. It's a nice show and tell. I've been to your breakfast twice. People's attention span there is not great. You have lots of things going on. There's 100 people. They're eating, and this is a technical document.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's more of introducing that there is one, but to even get into almost any specific on a sign or square footage at the chamber could be dangerous. You know, in that setting. You guys know better than I do, but so I guess it would be a great place to say we're going to have a sign ordinance and ideas to clean up things and give some examples and stuff. And then could you have a post meeting or try to get people signed up that want to sit down and talk?
That would be great, because if we could focus on where the issue is, if it's first of all, let everybody know that there's going to be this gap period where we've got, you know, a short amount of time, less than a year, to deal with refinements. How about people who are concerned about wall signs, you get a tally, and then we can organize that way? Because I think that would be helpful. There's when you compare to the county code and the kinds of things that we put into this code to be specific to Lapine, we increased height because of the snow load. You don't want a sign buried by snow. And in other places, we're much more flexible. And in other places, we're tighter because of the direction that we were given through the comp plan and the planning commission, etc. So, I think you've got a great structure here, and through education and chunking it up where we can get dialogue going, you'll ferret out anything that we've missed.
I think so too. I think there's also some ownership here in the part of the businesses, you know, that the word ought to be out there that we are doing a sign ordinance. And just my feeling is that all of the interest has been down in these last few days and everything, and I'll get to you in just a second. So I think it's I think it's important that we get their attention by hook or crook, that you need to pay attention, because in a year, if you haven't come forward, you won't get to vote. And the very way that's laid out here, that in this gap period these changes can be made, seems to me to be a way of resolving this. And I frankly, I know about Frontier Days. I know that's a joke, one sign. I see the canopies, and that's not realistic. But the variance or the exception is there, and it does establish that we've got this rule, but we've also got an exception here, which is reality. If you can make your case to the Planning Commission, you're gonna see results. So I really believe that we're at a point that we can move forward with this and still take care of the rest of this by the very things that we've discussed. That's Kim's.
Okay, so are you ready for others?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm not really in favor of passing an ordinance so that we could change it. So why are we under a time constraint? Is it the grant?
The LCD 2.
Yeah, and we have two things that the state has asked us to be mindful of.
Mm-hmm.
One, the compliance order that just came out on the comprehensive plan. So we have to have implementing ordinances through an adoption process. But because we're unique in that we're not going to, you could adopt it tomorrow, but it's not going to be effective until you have the jurisdiction transfer, and that's going to be about a year or so.
Right.
So, or less. So what we have are two separate goalposts. One, satisfy the grant,
mm-hmm.
and the compliance order, which is, city, you need to get something on the books to meet the mm-hmm. grant requirements and the comp plan requirements. And then what we're saying is, in the practical sense, we think it's a good way to proceed with the gap period, because people's interests are heightened. They realize they have a shorter period of time,
mm-hmm.
that there's a structure to compare against,
mm-hmm.
and when you do that, people start taking a greater interest. And because we have that time period to do the further refinements, you have more engagement with the citizens, because they'll bring forward issues to the Planning Commission and then back to you.
Okay, so I see that this probably is the most important, is the grant and the compliance on the order.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a little section here that I still had a hard time with.
Which
and that was the
what page are you on?
I'm on page 22, and it's the measurements. I couldn't really follow those. I had a hard time following those instructions.
We put in
22,
mm-hmm. 22.
We put in a diagram to help with that too. Let me give you an example. When we sat down with Carlson Sign Company, they said they had been having a terrible time with another city who was saying that if you have an awning and you have letters on that awning, the entire awning is the sign. The whole dimension, the outer dimension of that awning, whether your letters fill it up or not, is the sign. So that really wasn't fair. So we have put into the code that if you have something like that, you measure the area around the letters, for the most part. So when you look at the sign area under A1, it's measured within the lines drawn between the outermost dimensions of the frame or cabinet, which is for the sign copy,
mm-hmm.
containing the sign copy. So when you have a frame or cabinet, like a ground-mounted sign, you've got 40 feet of sign
okay
space.
With that one.
Oh, you're okay with that one?
Yeah.
Which one are you confused
okay,
on?
When the signs are not framed, that's where you lost me.
Okay.
22. Oh, 22. Okay, thank you.
22.
when the signs are not framed or on a base material, right?
On a scribe painted, yeah.
Okay. So when you have an individual letter, say Ray's, it has an R, an A, and a Y, and an S. So what you do is you measure, you go to the top of the R, and you make squares around the letters. That's the only way to deal with a sign that's not incorporated into a cabinet, except for the awning situation I talked about. So when a sign's not framed or on a base material and are inscribed, painted, printed, or projected or otherwise placed upon or attached to a building, canopy, awning, blah, 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 the sign area is the smallest possible space enclosing the sign copy. And the sign copy is the letter. And that's the fairest way to determine the sign area for those kinds of letters that are not attached to a flat plastic face.
Like this figure?
Yeah, just like that.
16.
Okay, so then, so that's how you measure on 16?
16.
Okay. We have that. We put that in the definitions because that is where people will look.
Okay.
And then, of course, don't forget, people, that this is just the ordinance.
Mm.
The sign application itself will have information to help people understand the code. So when you come in for a permit, you'll have an application. It'll have descriptive material. That's not part of our job to do. We're just required to write the legal part. So the sign application, when a citizen comes in, is going to be very helpful to explaining these things with different examples and diagrams.
Well, yeah, what I would envision is that you end up, when you have the application form itself that asks all the name and information and technical information, that there's a pamphlet, typically what you see, that will pull these examples and diagrams out of there. And that becomes something that when somebody comes in and wants to talk about sign permit, you say, okay, well, here's the application form. Here's the code. But also, here's your quick reference chart that is very explanatory.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's an administrative thing versus the legalities of what needs to be in that code sometimes.
And this is the one that we were talking about on 16.
Yeah. Okay.
And then these are new terms. No doubt, these are new terms that we have to get used to.
And then my final comment was, is that, so in this gap period, I would be more comfortable if it was, if the review was a little bit more formalized or scheduled, like establishing like a task force or something, just so that the average size of the church signs could be addressed, so that, you know, that it gives the business community an opportunity to really to have a point person to go to and kind of vet this stuff out.
And you're absolutely right. Your citizen involvement group within the city is the Planning Commission.
Okay.
And so if we have public outreach using the chamber and continuing on with our public notification requirements, let's say the month of August is wall sign month, and we're going to deal with wall signs and anything attached in the windows, like window signs, so that you've got that plane dealt with. And people can come in, and we'll have education, and we'll get additional comments to see if wall signs, everybody's happy with wall signs or not. That would be the best way to do it with the system that you have set up now.
Right, but also, this is kind of unique, is that we have two people in this specific profession that, you know, has dealing day in and day out with what has been established here. That's kind of, they know. So you don't think it would be appropriate to have some sort of, like, offset of the Planning Commission, and then they can meet with the Planning Commission?
I think
like a subcommittee.
PC.
I think the chamber should put that together. They then, that's what would happen. It's like they have an economic development committee. They need to sit. That's why they have a director and dues. And I mean, they need to sit and analyze this. Then they would come to the Planning Commission saying, we're from the chamber, we represent our business committee, and we don't think, you know, that's for the city to form a subcommittee of the Planning Commission. You know, that really, it's
really... We could do that, I think.
Yeah.
It's just that this is just now being finalized. In fact, there were changes in the last couple of weeks, and so to have something to really address, we need a little time to do that. I don't want to interrupt your thoughts, but I have some comments in that grain.
But we usually do that before it's adopted. That makes me a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I don't understand I don't even understand the emergency part of it, except for I understand there's some grants, and I don't know what the timelines of those are.
Everything has to be done by June 30th.
Okay.
So what we have proposed would give you a structure, and keep in mind we've been working on this for almost a year now with consistent public outreach and notice and the Planning Commission.
The sign references?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Before work sessions and public hearings before the Planning Commission and then City Council.
Well, I have some thoughts. We became a city because we're in local control. And we've adopted a lot of things, and we talk a lot about county ordinances and what the county requires and that kind of thing. And I don't know how it compares, but if we're going to have local control, then we really need to go beyond the minimum standards of, you know, reach out to the community and make sure the community is involved. And maybe we've done a lot of that, and I'm not sure how much we've done. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink things, so maybe that's where we're at. It feels like to me that we have a lot of detail here that we want to consider possibly retracting in the next gap. It seems to me like it'd be more logical to have a minimum of a skeleton that we add to as needed rather than be taking it back. I seldom see new laws go into place that are more lax. They seem to be more strict. And this is a unique community. We're having trouble meeting our density standards, and yet we want to have signs that are fairly restrictive, especially like in the case of the churches and things, it seems like. Overall, it seems like it's really pretty good, but challenging to read through and grasp in without a lot of time. It's too bad we have these constraints, because it would be nice to have the luxury of educating our folks better. A lot of them won't deal with it until they're forced to. They need a new sign, or they're at the end of their 5 years or something, and when that happens, then that's when we're going to be dealing with it, probably. So I guess maybe there's no other way to do it, but it just feels, it feels really restrictive. It feels like it's sort of in reverse to me, but I don't understand legislation and all that, because I heard there was 4,000 new laws that were being tried to be passed in Oregon this year, so it's just kind of the way it goes, I guess.
Could I add one thing, Dan?
Yes.
I don't believe Carlson's sign is here tonight, but in the record before you, you have their comments from the last time where they felt it was a business-friendly ordinance, that they asked for us to flex up other things, which we did. They have extensive experience, obviously. And they went through it line by line with me in a room, and we made a significant number of changes and reduced the amount of text. There is no requirement for a comprehensive sign plan in the code now. The heights are taller. The sign copy for various signs is larger. And the flexibility for determining sign size has been flexed up, as well as a whole host of other issues that they felt were extremely conducive to business. It doesn't mean it's perfect, but the best way to get closer to what is customized for the community is to start with something that is a basic framework and then refine it during this gap period, because as Rick had mentioned, it will never be great from the get-go.
Yeah.
And boy, how long do we have to work on this? Not a lot of time.
Does it, okay, so say we go through this gap in this 5 year and we make adjustments and stuff, what is that end document going to look at? Is it going to be all fragmented with amendments and exceptions and all kinds of paper?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Do you redraw the whole thing so it's easy? Okay, so you can do that.
Yeah.
I think that could work. Yeah. It's just, when I start seeing exceptions on different papers and things, it gets bulky.
We're required to let you know what changes occurred since the last time you gave us direction. So when the exceptions request came in, we separated that out for you so you could see that. Mm-hmm. And because this is a legislative process, changes can be made up to the point of adoption. So there's no other way to get you that data. And obviously our staff report provides the rest of the changes for you.
So over time, the whole thing would be redrawn so somebody could read through it and simply understand it without having to reference
Yes, that's why we put the charts in the front. And there's a lot of information about signs. So one thing that might be interesting is to see if during this gap period whether the chart helps or not. We tested it on a variety of people, and they said, oh, yeah, I'm in the residential zone. I can see all the signs that I'm allowed. If I need more detail, I go to Section 11. And that seemed to be a good way to get quick information to citizens. I live in a home, I get these number of signs. If I'm a church or a public facility, I get this number of signs. And then for commercial and industrial, instead of having 15 different commercial zones with different sign requirements for each one, and the same for industrial, they're lumped together. They're essentially the same thing. And the reason we recommend that is because we're not too interested what goes on inside the building. It's really the advertising to let people know what's happening in the community. It shouldn't matter whether it's commercial or industrial. Mm-hmm. So there's a great simplicity in this code. It's lengthy because we have so many definitions to help people understand what's in the code.
Yeah. I think that's the only... I don't know that it's too tough or anything. It just feels like it's hard to grasp the whole thing. It just feels like a lot to get in a short period of time.
We'll help you with
that.
So I just have to finish up. In the exception, it didn't look like it had an appeal process or mentioned an appeal process.
In the particular one?
Well, for the code itself.
And may I say something?
If you direct us, we will add that in tonight. Appeals typically go to the city council or their designee, and we would add that in as at your direction. And that's
what was that in?
It was in an earlier version, but it was.
Left out of here?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you direct us to put in the standard appeal, we can do that.
Okay. And then...
Are you talking a variance or an appeal section? Because the appeal section is actually in the procedures ordinance. I was seeing if we had something specific in here. But if you remember, the procedures ordinance, which is slated for adoption too, for example, in the zoning code or in the lighting code or in the land division code and in the sign code, there's no specific appeal procedures. Those are all contained in the procedures ordinance. And again, if you think of that, that's the rules that say the fashion in which you administer all these other codes. So there are appeal procedures.
So the exception is going to be in the
What James is saying, appeals are covered in procedures generally for everything? If you wanted something separate in the sign code, you have to add it in.
Correct. But
so where's the exception going to live?
It stays in
there because it's exceptions specific to the sign code. And there are exceptions in the zoning code that are specific to the zoning code provisions. But the appeals section is right here in the procedures ordinance. Mm-hmm. And what it says is that regardless of whether somebody wants to appeal something from the zoning code, from the sign code, from the lighting code, or from the land division code, the procedures are all contained right here. They're consistent. It's exactly the same appeal procedure for each one of those codes.
Okay.
And it talks about in here that this procedures code is applicable to all of those codes.
It makes it cleaner.
What's the title of that document?
That's the Land Use Procedures Ordinance.
Okay. Yeah.
These are the rules. This is kind of like the game, and these are the rules
to the game.
You open the game board. These are...
And then one last thing, and then I'll tie it up. Oh, then we'll finish. Is that before we conclude, I'd like to hear from the Planning Commissioner the reason that they supported the sign ordinance.
Okay, go ahead. John, there's another step that I made that we need to come back to. So as soon as John's done,
John Thomas, Planning Commissioner, Chair. In answer directly, I have a couple of things. In answer to Adele, Councilor's question, is our desire was to be more lenient than what Deschutes County codes has. This document, I think, reflects that. It's taken over a year to develop. One thing we kept referencing back to the comprehensive plan, that is absolutely our blueprint with the Planning Commission. In there, it loudly states that Lapine needs to clean up the clutter, and part of that clutter is signs right now. We're all aware of that, and so we tried to attempt to do that while being more lenient than what Deschutes County had previously. Now, that's why we came up with what we did, because of reference to the comprehensive plan, and that's the public speaking. The other thing is, the council right now has heard just two specifics. Banners, and it's all about the sign code at this point. There's a lot of other more documents here. But specific to the sign code, they've heard banners and church signs. The council at this time could address just those two, put in four banners, put in 32 square feet, whatever, get that addressed right now. If that's the desire of the council, that could be done. Addressing the Planning Commission is going to be very, very simple, and we will welcome those variances to be dealt with. After this ordinance is passed, the Planning Commission, especially during this economy, will have very little to do, and will welcome people coming in and addressing the Planning Commission on specific properties. And I can't see where the Planning Commission presently is going to be real tough on granting variances. So I'd just like to put people's minds at ease and say that if we start with a common sense document, address the two things you heard tonight, and let's move on.
We haven't closed the hearing. Mm-hmm. And there was a request for another comment, and I'll grant that at this time with Robin, please.
I was just going to say that, you know, the business community really has not had a lot of input to the signage, because we weren't aware of, you know, number one, you can't input on something that doesn't exist, or there is no framework, as Deborah said. So now that there's a framework, there is an opportunity. We can look at it and touch it and feel it and say, ooh, you know, this maybe is not going to work. What I kind of hate to see is that we create a document that's going to force so much in exceptions that it becomes somebody else's problem 5 years from now, that there's enough strictness within the document that everything becomes an exception. We place a burden on the next Planning Commission and the next City Council and the next... that's just my concern, is that if it's too restrictive, we're creating a problem for somebody else down the line.
Thank you. I really want to move to a point of closing public hearing, unless there's a comment. Oh, and okay.
Thank you. The description of variance. When you go and get a variance, you pay for it. When you go for an exception, there is no increase of fee. Is that correct, Deborah? That's a huge thing, because when you go through the county now and you want to triple the size square footage of your sign, you pay a huge thousands of dollars of fee. So we need to keep saying the word exception rather than variance.
And that's one of the flexible standards. It's a new city, and the things that we're trying to do is customize it for what the citizens want. 99.9 of the things you've heard tonight really relate to just a few sections and an overall concept. And staff still recommends that during the 12-month or less period, we could really focus on getting those refinements and energizing the community about this. This framework's been before the Planning Commission for nearly a year. And just in the last couple of weeks, of course, we've been making the changes you've asked us to make.
And the exception process compared to the variance process, exception is really trying to get at, I heard the term common sense, is that in a code, and it was funny, it was a Redmond Planning Commission meeting last night, and the thought was that we as a planning commission or we as planners can't think of every situation that ever could come up, is that you have an exception process. And the exception process allows you to get at those things that you could have all the public input in the world that you could never think of. Because just comprehensively, we can't think of every situation. The exception process lets you get at that common sense to employ it. Whereas the variance is more stringent, because if somebody really wants to go to the extreme of what you gave a lot of hard thought and effort and debate to, well then, you really need to prove to us why. So there's a difference. And so that's where I think the exception process gets you. Again, without fee, how do you put a common sense answer? Mm-hmm.
To answer your question about closing the hearing, your ordinance is written to capture all of the ordinances before you. So as a straw vote, you could agree to move on to the next topic.
All right.
And I think that would be a better answer.
Okay. But I actually want, excuse me, I want to go on with the comments of the sign ordinance on the council. And you're okay right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have one other comment, but you go ahead and let these guys
okay.
Deborah, these ordinances that we are about to vote on, are they set in concrete?
No.
Okay, so in other words, if Robin wants 25 banners across town, she can go to the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission can either change the law or the rules or the ordinance, or they can grant the variance to do that. Is that correct?
There are a variety of procedures, but essentially if you want to change the rule, you would get a recommendation from the Planning Commission that would be referred to you.
And it would come back to the City Council. But in other words, just because we pass something tonight that says that there's only allowed one banner, that doesn't mean that that can't go to the Planning Commission.
That's right.
And the Planning Commission say, hey, they were wrong when they wrote that. Mm-hmm. We're going to recommend that you have X number of banners allowed in town. Once they make that decision, that can come to the City Council, and the City Council can change the rules permanently.
Yes.
So
yes.
It appears to me like most of the objections that I've heard tonight could go directly to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission could address them, make their recommendations, and come back to the council and say, hey, we think that this law needs to be changed, or this ordinance needs to be changed, and we recommend that we change one banner to six banners or three banners or whatever they come up with. And then the City Council can say yes or they can say no. So it appears to me that these objections that we've heard tonight can go directly to the Planning Commission, because, like I say, I know that there's been a lot of public hearings. I've been here at a lot of Planning Commission meetings where there was a public hearing. We had nobody here. And they were advertised in the Eagle, and they were advertised in the Advertiser, and they were advertised in Wise Buys, because I saw the ads myself. So I feel that it would behoove us to go right ahead, pass the ordinances, this is my personal opinion, and then have everybody that has an objection to how this is done address that objection to the Planning Commission, because that's why we have them. Let them make the decision that they feel is best for the City of Lapine and the citizens of Lapine, and then bring their recommendations back to the City Council and let the City Council make the final decision. Thank you.
Stu?
Well, here we are. 6 years later, still waiting on the sign ordinance, and I think the commission has brought and everyone has brought everything to us, and it has checks and balances built into it, an appeals process to come back to us. As a business manager in this community, I like to think of myself as being kept up on what's happening in the city, you know, aside from sitting here. But, you know, I was aware that there was meetings in the process of signs and ordinances, land use, the whole bit. So, you know, it's a business owner's responsibility to stay abreast of what may affect their business, and signs is one of them. So I think we need to move forward with this ordinance the way it's written, and if there's concerns and appeals, then that's what we have the commission in place for. The educational side of it, I agree 100%. You know, we as a city do have a responsibility, on the other hand, to educate the business folks out there. And I think we can do that in conjunction with the Chamber of Commerce. You know, we want to be a friendly, you know, we're a friendly city. We want businesses to thrive here. So we need to work in conjunction with the businesses. So, you know, this may be an opportunity for the two to come together at a table and start the educational process and work together with it. But I think we need to get moving along with cleaning the city up with our sign ordinances. So I think we need to move forward with it. But I want to thank everyone for their comments. They're all excellent comments. And we need that reminder once in a while.
I would just like to make one more comment, and then we'll go to this suggestion that staff has made. I agree with the whole idea that we need to move forward. I think we have this framework here. We're looking at a deadline of 30 June, and I honestly believe that we've heard tonight enough information about how we can deal with these, the banners, the other uniqueness of signs, the church signs, and have that information come back to the Planning Commission, let them do their job. And I think this gap time is a very realistic idea. Having heard what the Planning Commission chair has said, we could deal with those two items. But we could change that tonight and direct staff to change it to 4 and then get some kind of average on the church signs. But I really think that moving it to 4 isn't the answer. Because I think that there are events in this town that need a lot more than 4 signs. I'd like to see an education approach from the chamber, letting everybody know, like was described, this month we do this and this month we do that, or some fashion of that, and make sure that the business community or the community period knows that, listen, you've got a year, and if you don't step up, you know, and here's a vehicle to do it. And then we go to the Planning Commission, discuss it out, lay it out there, and then that comes to us with a very reliable idea of, okay, they've listened to it, they made this decision, we're not spending a lot of time here rehashing all of this. That's what they're designed for. So having said that, is there anybody else? And I would ask for a consent, unless
just one thing. You mentioned a while ago about the pamphlet that would be a kind of a synopsis or a summary, something that would be easy to the general person to understand. I think that's something that maybe we should accelerate. It would help in that educational process. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get very many of my mom and pop business owners to read 46 pages of legalese. It's just not going to happen. And so if we could come up with something like that, It would definitely help the process. And then the other question that I have is, what kind of cost? Is there going to be a cost when people come to seek an exception? I think you said did we say it was 4 weeks or 30 days or some kind of a, there was a time frame, I think, I don't remember what it was, associated, but there's time and money, and what kind of hurdles would that be during this gap period?
None.
But there is a time frame. And then notices.
No. After the time frame is in the code, so that after you have full jurisdiction, somebody comes in, I need an exception. I've got a unique case.
Yeah.
Okay, they've got so much time to get their answer from the Planning Commission. And that's why the time period's in there, so that there's time and an expectation for the citizen or business owner to know when they're going to get their answer, when the notices are going to go out, etc. So that there's an expectation that can be realized on how much time it's going to take.
Okay.
And actually, it says 40 days, that the Planning Commission will act on it within 40 days of receipt of the application, and that's so that the Planning Commission doesn't drag their feet and acts timely in answering your question about your exception.
So say the church has wanted to modify this 16 square foot. That's a real estate sign. 16 square foot sign ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
How long would it take to accomplish that?
Do it in the gap period.
Okay.
Or after the code is adopted, you do it through the exceptions process or a text amendment.
Dave, can I say something here? It appears to me that you're struggling with this a little bit in the fashion that we pass this, we're going to have this gap period of up to a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I would expect the community to, through the education process, to bring all of these items to the Planning Commission. And there's no cost or anything. It's just updating. I'll use the sign ordinance, and they make a recommendation to the council, and we say okay and or agree or want more changes that we want to put into it. So and I don't mean to say you're struggling with that. If you didn't understand it that way, is what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I don't think I have a very good handle on that. But I get that it's all doable. I just am trying to understand the process, because busy people aren't going to take lots and lots of time and energy to be going through processes to help us revise our sign ordinances. It's going to be based on their need and what they see as coming up to them. And so if we're going to educate them, we need to understand the time frames, and if there is going to be money involved, that they, you know, application fees, are we going to be sending notices out to the neighbors within 100 feet, is there going to be costs associated? Is the city going to bear that cost, or the applicant, or what?
In the gap period, there are no costs for these refinements. After you have jurisdiction and you're implementing your code, if somebody needs an exception or they want a change to the text, if your staff, whoever your staff is, has to expend time, meaning they're being paid an hourly wage, typically the city would charge a fee to help subsidize part of that,
mm-hmm.
just like any other city does. But this gap period is an enticement to get people to come okay. together, do it while it's free. You've got a framework to pick apart, do it.
That sounds good.
Then having got to this point, I'd ask that we have a general consensus that this is where we are with the sign code and move on.
Mm-hmm. General shaking of body parts?
Yes.
What code would you like to discuss next?
The longest and hardest.
Zoning? The table of contents is in. You have, we received no comments specific to the zoning ordinance. Since the last hearing. And we have plenty of flexibility, the same way you do in the sign code for exceptions and exemptions and variances, all of those things. Now, you have a variety of choices for flexing up the code in the zoning ordinance, because it's much more serious when you deal with the permissible uses on a property. So in some cases, you'll have to do the hardcore variance. The little things, you'll have an exception. Some things will be totally exempt. That's how zoning ordinances are put together, so that you have ultimate control over the land uses. You must have that. If you can't control what's going on the property, then you're not meeting your comprehensive plan and everything that's intended for a residential zone. So I say that very strongly, because you're going to say, well, why do we have to have a variance and an exception and an exemption and a conditional use? Because there are varying degrees of review depending on the intensity of the land use. That's the only reason. But since the last hearing, I've had no public comments other than going through with our city attorney and cleaning up things that she felt needed to be cleaned up. And those were mainly typos and legal language. And your charts are cleaned up, of course.
Ready to go to public comment? Is there any public comment to the zoning ordinance? Hearing none. Council?
I have kind of a general conceptual question, I guess. Again, there's a lot of stuff there. How is the transition from the previous zoning going to the zoning we have on our maps? How is that, and when does that happen?
The same time that jurisdiction comes over.
Okay.
So when the city says we're ready to take up the reins, we've got people to do this work for us, we've ironed out any wrinkles, that's when it would occur.
So is that what this says?
That's what your ordinance says. And at the very last page of this ordinance, it talks about the effective date.
Okay.
So if you go to the very last page.
I thought that I read, and I probably can't go to the page, but I thought I read that there will be a continued encouragement to use past practices on some of the agriculture and forest lands.
Various zones have different standards, but on the very last page, the effective date, it says the zoning ordinance shall take effect once the city and county agree to a transition of services program and 30 days after that date of the joint approval of such a program. When cities and counties do ordinances, they often put in effective dates, and we're suggesting that it's for cities 30 days after the approval, and the county would have to agree to the same. So you have that on the very last page showing your adoption, when you adopt this, and then when it's effective. We've noticed when that will occur, and that's when you do the transition.
So there's comments in some of the language that says the comp plan map and the city zoning map differ in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
What areas is that? I mean, I looked at both maps, and I couldn't really see. In fact, the maps look to be the same map to me, but
well,
it references two different maps.
We will have a two-map system. The existing zoning that the county has in place, and then the comp plan zoning, which is the 20-year view. And that's, I think, what you're talking about, is when you look out 20 years, what does the community want to look like? And it wants to look like what those zones represent.
Okay.
Today's zoning is a little different because you already have zones in place.
But when the zone, when this date occurs here, that it becomes effective and adopted, is that when it shifts?
We have a city zoning map and city zoning ordinance, correct.
That's when it shifts. Okay.
Correct.
Couldn't get that. So it seemed to me like there was some implication, if not direct language, that said that some of the areas would be like encouraged to remain open space and things like that, which I don't know how you do that in residential zoning, you know.
I'm not.
I guess I'd have to follow exactly.
No.
Okay.
Let us know.
Okay.
If something pops up and we need to refine that, we will. But you'll have a two-map system. That's the important thing.
All right.
Initially.
Here's, okay, here it is. On page, it's called Implementing Ordinances, Lapine Development Codes, Implementing Ordinances, Proposed Findings.
No, these aren't the findings. Oh. This is just background.
That's just background?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not current information.
Well, which page are you looking at?
Page 3.
Okay. Oh, these are findings. What we've done in the findings, when you look at the overview, the overview takes you through a bunch of points, clear up to point number 14. And the overview talks about, it's a background of the processes that you went through. Because if you remember, the adopting the implementing ordinances is a piece of your overall compliance, which is adopting your comprehensive plan and then your implementing ordinances, which we're discussing here tonight. So in the overview, what we do is we provide kind of this, it's a background, think of it as a summary background statement of everything that went into your compliance with land use laws. So we discuss your process that you went through for adopting the comprehensive plan, and as you work your way down, it says the following findings are offered in support of the implementing development codes and ordinances for the city of Lapine. They serve as specific laws and requirements for the implementation of the goals and policies of the comprehensive plan.
Okay.
So these basic findings of fact are kind of just like...
the kind of a basis.
They're the givens.
Okay.
You know, that these things happened.
Yes.
These things happened with a comprehensive
okay.
plan. And as you progress through these, you know, by number, when you get to, like, once you get done with, like, items 10 and 11, you start switching from the description of what happened during the comprehensive plan process to what's happening with the implementing code process.
Okay.
So we talked, like, number 14, applicability of the new development codes. You know, and as you move through administration of those. And then subsequently is when we get into compliance with the statewide planning goals. We just say how, what we're really saying is how the comprehensive plan, how these codes make your comprehensive plan conform with the statewide planning goals.
Okay.
So it's they both work together. You tend to think of them separately, but they both work together. The comprehensive plan in and of itself gives you 20-year guidance, but it's nothing without the laws that say, you know, where the rubber meets the road. This is how you're going to make that happen. So we have a lot of description of both in these findings.
Okay. So this is sort of a historical basis for mm-hmm. getting to where we are, but this doesn't really have any... doesn't have to do with anything that's permanent. The permanent part is the ordinance that we're establishing.
You think of this as telling how and why.
The bridge.
Like a staff report.
Exactly. How and why what has been developed
yeah.
meets the state requirements,
okay.
the state goals. The state goals say you have to do X, Y, and Z to meet the planning process for the state of Oregon. This says what we've done locally meets X, Y, and Z.
And I saw that the state has approved certain sections of our
comprehensive plan.
The one thing that, and I know there's probably no other way to do this, but on page 8 it talks about how it says the commercial and industrial lands are for the most part consistent with the historical development pattern and infrastructure constructed to support that pattern. And it's really not a thing. It's just that, you know, we look at history, and that's probably the only way we have to judge things, but are we also looking forward to future and what's happening now? Because, you know, we haven't had much development for a while, and historically, that could be a pattern that we hope doesn't continue. So the historic, basing what our plans are on human history concerns me sometimes. And I know that we're only counting on 900 people or something coming into the city in the next 20 years, and we're probably already done with that part with the city, with the state, but it continues to bother me that we're not planning on developing more industrial ground and moving in that direction.
Can I just for a quick response? One is two parts in planning more industrial ground is that, again, I mean, whether it's residential land or what they call economic lands, industrial or commercial, there's a limit of what you can actually have to meet your projected population need, and Lapine exceeds those limits. But in here, what we're describing is that on your comprehensive plan map, your industrial lands, your commercial lands, they're not without planning. There was some planning to arrange those.
Yeah.
And so what we've said is, in some areas of your map, it reflects that historic planning that's been done. But then we go on to say, for example, like in the next sentence, after it says to support that pattern, the mixed-use lands have been identified on large tracts of vacant land. What we're doing is we're acknowledging that in some of those areas, we've changed, we've created mixed-use lands to provide buffers and to alter that pattern. It doesn't completely alter the pattern because it's not entirely broken. I mean, some of it was based on good planning. But what we've done is modified it to look to the future like you're talking about.
Yeah, and I know I've gone through a careful process, but I just hope that we don't miss opportunity for not, you know, for just looking back and not looking forward. So
one thing to consider, Dan, is that's kind of the old map.
Yeah.
And didn't have a lot of flexibility. This one has plenty of flexibility and references all the things we heard at the complex hearings. Gives you lots of mixed use, more than most cities that I've worked in.
Okay.
And your flexibility for open space and preserving the things that people found important is also in there, as well as reserving lands to the east that right now are going to be zoned one way, but in the future, since they're not used for anything else, they could easily become industrial lands or what we call employment lands.
And in some of those, for example, like the crosshatched area, some new elements that have been built in, is those are the transition lands. Those require and allow for, and when you say require, I should actually say that they allow for master planning of that area. So rather than being, and those are on those edges of where you had residential land next to industrial land, which isn't always, out the backyard, you have a factory. It allows for master planning design to occur, so that rather than being really stringent and saying, this is single family residential and this is industrial and these are your setbacks, you allow for design to occur that would allow for a variety of development that provides a better buffer. So those are the types of things that was referring to.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are we in consensus with this the zoning ordinance and move to the next one?
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to thank Dan for bringing that up. That was a good,
mm-hmm. very good question.
Good explanation.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And what is the council's pleasure? Would you like to do procedures and get that one out of the way?
Why not? Okay.
We've had no additional testimony on the procedures ordinance. Your city attorney went through it with us and made minor typos and corrections. And the document you have before you has the same close on the last page saying that it's adoption date and effective date, so there's no confusion about when that's to occur. So it's fairly, it's pretty much the same.
Okay. Is there any public comment to a land use procedures code? Hearing none, council? We're in consensus then that we move forward.
That was easy.
It was the game too.
How does land division sound?
Sounds good. Nice title.
Same thing as procedures. No public comment. The city attorney went through line by line, made minor typographical changes. We took out one full section, which was the financial partition section. City attorney felt it had too much exposure in terms of foreclosure laws. So it's a technicality. It was just safer to remove it. Sometime in the future, if the world changes, maybe it'll go back in. But for now, it's just better to leave it out.
Any public?
You look like you were ready to say something.
No, I just see if somebody had any comments.
Okay.
Any public comment on land division code? Hearing none, council? Are we in consent that this is okay and we'll move on to the next one?
Yes.
Okay.
What is the next one?
Lighting
ordinance. Thank you.
There we go. Well, let me get rid of that.
Same thing, we didn't have any additional public comment except from the city attorney who said part of your chart is missing some data, so I put that back in to make it more clear. And there was a question about the zones that the lighting code applied to, so that was clarified. And otherwise, there were no other comments that came to me. And I double-checked this morning with Pima County and the City of Tucson, which is the basis for this particular lighting ordinance, and went through with them to make sure that we hadn't left anything out. They were very generous in that. And just as a double check to make sure that we had all the terminology correct and there were no other errors. Oh, except for one. I think in your lighting ordinance, the very last page, unless I corrected it already, there was a reference to adopting the zoning ordinance. And let me double check that. Hang on. Does anybody have that quickly to look at the last page?
The last line says lighting ordinance.
It does?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's been changed.
Double check. Adoption?
Is that what you're referencing?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
It's sometimes hard to keep all this stuff.
I can imagine.
Kind of
the
same bottom line to all.
Is there any public comment on the outdoor lighting code? Hearing none, council?
I guess the only thing, I think it's covered. Again, sometimes, you know, with different sections, you forget. It's hard to keep it kind of straight for me, but if somebody has a, like we have a couple places that sell Christmas trees during the, you know, Christmas season, and they have lights set up around their lot and stuff. I think there was something in here about being a temporary, some lighting is okay, but I think they still have to have all the same type of lights and stuff. Is that something
right? Let me see.
Find it real quick.
Was that under holiday lighting? I think so. We have to be so careful what we say anymore.
Yeah, I know.
It says temporary lighting is intended uses which by their nature are limited duration, for example, holiday decorations.
Okay,
so is that an exception then? Or is that
it would just be allowed.
It would be allowed.
Yeah.
Okay. With any kind of lights, or is there, are we designating what kind of lights?
Hang on, let me get to that section.
Those people just work on a small budget, and I hate to make, you know, for a temporary thing, I hate to create a onerous situation.
Where are you? Show me what section.
Well, I think we're on page 7.
4.19. Okay. Mm-hmm. Temporary lighting. Right, so those would be exempt.
Okay.
And again, that's those provisions like that you see, the exemptions and exceptions, is trying to build in exactly what you said, build in the common sense, and that these are things that are going to occur all year long, and there's a practical reason for them, and saying you don't need to go through any permitting process to get at the common sense.
Well, and you don't want your staff absorbed with little tiny things like that.
But also on the back end, saying, you know, there was forethought as to when you can have these, and we're kind of letting you have them, so that in the middle of July and August, for no reason, you're not having the lighting of your whole town like that.
Okay. Any other comment?
I guess the only other thing I had a question about is, you know, for enforcement on this, it seems like we've got to have a way of measuring lumens. And that's kind of a foreign thing. And is that a spending situation or?
$500 a lumen meter. Okay. So we felt that was a fair expense to have an accurate way to tell how much light is light. Okay. No arguments between neighbors. What it says on the meter is the type of light output.
Okay.
We had a great discussion about that, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, well, lights is kind of, you go signs and then lights. But in 30 seconds, you can approve how you're going to build 200 lot subdivisions and roads and sidewalks and pipes and sewer, and that gets 2 minutes. And how many meters you're putting up for the rodeo, 2 hours. Isn't it funny? You know what's important.
it's very similar to the jurisdiction.
That's normal.
Are there any further council comments? Okay. Then we have a consensus that we like the outdoor lighting code as it is. Okay, and...
SD. Sorry.
No, I was going to say that are we doing the SDC mitigation concept in here?
What I'd recommend is that since you're through all of the ordinance type
right.
stuff, is that you deliberate and consider how you want to proceed, whether you want to proceed with a vote or not. Do that, and then we'll deal with the resolution because it's a different process.
Sure.
And quite frankly, I can't remember how you do resolutions here. So if it's just by roll call vote.
Resolutions are fairly simple. Did you advertise the resolution?
Yes.
This is a continuing.
Oh,
resolution, yeah. They do, it's not a roll call vote.
Okay.
No. They just make a resolution, you just make a motion to adopt the resolution if that's
great.
What they're going to do.
So it's easy peasy.
Yeah, okay. But if it's separate from these ordinances, then
it is
get
separate.
The ordinances
it is.
Out of the way.
It
and
is,
then
yeah.
You have to do his ordinance.
Then we're ready to close the public hearing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you are. Okay.
Should
the ordinances.
Are we going to deliberate on the date or no?
Well, I can't give you a date because we don't know for sure when jurisdiction will transfer. We have a rough idea.
Mm-hmm.
But the only date that we can be certain of is when you adopt it now, and then later on when the IGA is changed, so that jurisdiction will occur 30 days hence after that. So it gives us time for notice to the public, etc.
So all of these indicate 30 days after joint approval.
That's correct.
Okay. And we'll close the public hearing on
the ordinance.
Ordinance 2011-03 and council deliberation. Is there any...
I think we've done it. At least
okay.
I have.
Don?
I'm ready to vote.
Dan?
I'm good.
No, I deliberated.
I agree. I would entertain a motion to accept ordinance 2011-03. An ordinance accepting and adopting procedures, land division, zoning, signs, and lighting ordinance, and mitigation concept format.
I shall move.
Whoa. I think you got the wrong one.
No, that's different. That's talking about methodology.
Okay, so
your adopting ordinance does not include the SDC methodology because that's covered by the resolution.
Right.
I move.
So was that the right
What's
one?
A mitigation concept?
Yeah, 03.
Yeah.
The SDC mitigation concept. We haven't talked
about
that.
We haven't
talked
about
that.
Right.
No,
that
that's
that.
Next. This is 08. That's dash.
But you just read that.
Yeah.
You just read that in your phrase.
Well,
we're including the mitigation concept format.
What the motion that one of the counselors will need to make is to adopt the ordinances that were brought before the council tonight,
okay.
Referenced in the ordinance.
Okay. In the, I was actually reading from the agenda. I'll read from the ordinance 2011-03, an ordinance adopting the procedures, land division, zoning, zone maps, map sign, and lighting provisions.
I shall move.
Second.
Are there any questions? Roll call vote, please.
Dan Barco.
Councilor McAfee, yes.
Councilor Brenner, yes.
Councilor Martinez, yes.
And the mayor's yes. It's unanimous that we adopt the ordinance. 2011-03.
Okay.
That's
great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, and we'll move right to the resolution, number 2011-08. A resolution approving, in principle, the general methodology described in the SDC mitigation concept document, which you have in this package, and this is what it looks like. I note one typo.
Uh-oh. Wait a minute. You found a typo?
On item 5. Where data can be used for as a...
What page are you on?
I'm on the front page of the mitigation concept.
Right.
Line, item 5, under findings.
Yeah.
And it says the following data can be used for as a... One of those two needs to go away.
Scroll up.
This is the concept.
Uh huh. And what page are you on? The very first page.
And it's
for
James.
Yes. You've got a choice of how you describe the basis.
For heaven's sake, of course. Yes.
Okay.
Errors and omissions like that, you can direct me to change. I'll change.
Okay. Change that, would you?
same mistake on this resolution. 2011-08. Same
as for as a
yes
language.
We'll read that into the record as being a change the council wants to make, and it's done for the most part.
Okay. Then is there a motion to adopt resolution 2011-08? The resolution approving in principle the general methodology described in the SDC mitigation concept document.
We need to read this?
Resolution?
Yes.
The title. If whoever wants to make the motion or...
Is there a motion?
I so move.
Don't everybody say second?
Mm-hmm. I'll second with a question. And I have a question.
Okay. Is there a question?
I believe this includes Exhibit A, Resolution Number 2011. Is that correct?
That is Exhibit A.
This is Exhibit A of that resolution?
Of that resolution,
yes.
Correct.
Okay. I just have a question that I need clarification on page 4. Item number 4, I'm kind of mixed in 1 and 2 there. There's a sentence that reads, the resolution shall set up the amount of the charge, type of permit, which charge applies, and if charge applies to a geographic area smaller than the entire city, the geographic area is subject to charge.
Okay. When you do your TSP, and you'll hire a traffic engineer to do that, and oftentimes they're qualified to do SDC methodologies, meaning they'll go into great depth on how your SDC charge is created. The charge itself will be done by resolution, and that's what that talks about. It's another resolution.
To implement the charge.
Yes.
It's actually say this is what we're going to put in place.
Okay, so there's a potential that a charge may occur to a geographic area smaller than the entire city.
Yes.
And then in item 2, it says, the last line says, the development charge is hereby imposed upon all development within the city. And I just don't see how those two can both, they seem contradictory.
It's giving you the ability to do it.
Correct.
When you do the next resolution, you're going to probably do one for the city.
Unless there's special need.
I think that's just setting where you could. Maybe right. You had some area of development that wanted to go and do some fancy something, and it's almost they're incesting themselves. And they said, you know, like a planned unit development or something, that was going to go take a 40-acre piece and
yes.
It's part of it. And they said, you know, we want to pay a double SDC because we want brick pavers on our sidewalks or, you know, something they were doing.
Conversely, you could make it less than the rest of the city
right.
Because you're trying to incent development in a certain
area. You take a wider area.
Is that last line not saying that the charges have to be imposed on all development?
No, unless otherwise exempted
right.
By a future ordinance or other local or state law, street SDC is hereby imposed upon all development with the city. So some sort of SDC is going to be imposed.
Oh, now I understand. It's any development would have SDCs. It doesn't mean that the whole city would be...
If you don't develop the land, you don't pay any charge.
Oh, were you thinking that the people...
So it gives you two choices.
Somehow I got the feeling from reading that that there would somehow be an SDC.
Okay, well let's go through it section because we there's only four sentences, so we should we could be able to do this. A street systems development charge, or an SDC, is established and may be revised by resolution of the council. That's your authority. That resolution, meaning the resolution, shall set the amount of the charge, whatever the SDC is, the type of permit to which the charge applies. So grocery stores may pay a different charge than a retail outlet mall.
Okay.
Okay. And if that charge applies to a geographic area smaller than the entire city, the geographic area is subject to the charge. So it's saying that you can charge by individual uses, by territory, by subunits of that territory. So you have all the choices in front of you. And then number two is the specific sentence says, unless otherwise exempted by a future ordinance or other local or state law, because those laws change from time to time, a street systems development charge, or an SDC, is hereby imposed upon all development within the city. So unless something is called out as we're not going to charge that, new development pays a fee.
But then I should say new development.
Well, we
sometimes if you do a major remodel, it can trigger the payment, all kinds of things.
Okay, but this, the way this reads, it's anything that's developed in the city is charged.
Unless you're exempted.
Unless you exempt it out.
Yeah.
And there'll be an extensive resolution, and if you've looked at other cities' resolutions on SDCs, they're thick. And because there's so many different types of choices available.
And different charges for various different types of commercial uses is
I was saying the ordinance doesn't get into the detail of that, but the resolution is going to.
It gives you the ability to get into the detail, so to speak.
Okay.
And but basically, when you have an SDC, pretty much everyone is going to pay.
Everybody that has something that's developed in the city is going to pay an SDC?
Unless you exempt them out.
Depending on what it is they're building or doing.
No, I mean, this doesn't say new development. It says all...
Well, I guess, Richard, what are you describing then, all development?
Well,
I mean, if you say
my land that has a building on it is developed land in the city.
Okay. It's already there.
Yes.
Okay.
But this doesn't say... It doesn't exclude property that's already there.
Unless otherwise exempted means that the city will go through that process when it does its SDC resolution and say, here's what's charged, here's what's not
so
charged.
So I'm hearing you want clarity that development means doesn't include existing
developed
land.
Okay. Okay, we're just reading it for what it is.
You still want it, you can't probably put the word new in it.
Well,
what would happen is in a future resolution where you adopt it, it would be, I think, a simple statement that says existing development
is exempted
from this, and it was like one short clause.
I don't know why we just don't say that here, but okay.
Because this is just the framework.
Doesn't limit it. You may, for some reason, you may find some developed properties that, by virtue of impacts, I'm just throwing this out there that you would want to apply it to.
Okay.
So it doesn't shut the door on anything.
Okay.
But it gives you the ability to exempt it out in the future.
So anybody in the city with developed property could be subject to an SDC whether or not they're doing anything new.
No. If you just sit in your house you're in, and you're not adding on, and you're not tearing it down and starting over, you would never come down to have to pay one. It triggers a building permit. If you're not getting a building permit because you're not doing anything, there's no method to charge you.
Yeah. And that's typically what you do is you link it to the building permit.
Yeah.
Specifically.
And you know, they'll say so much percent if you're doing for changing the use, all kinds of things. They'll give you a credit for existing use. And
mm-hmm. Usually new impacts and how you define impact.
So for the city, how I understand it, probably maybe it might even be wrong, but is if it affects the infrastructure or has a impact on the infrastructure, then you have to pay for it.
Yes. I understand that, but that isn't the way I read it.
Can I read it for you? An SDC charge is hereby imposed upon all development. To me, the key word there is development. If you're going to develop something, you're going to have an SDC. And how you go about developing something is get a building permit. It doesn't say anything about the property that's there, it's already developed or anything.
Okay.
It's saying imposed upon all development.
So and it's very clear to me.
Tell future development. Then.
Well, in the...
You could say future development, sure.
You guys aren't going to charge one.
It says change. It's not that. Yeah. Development means amendment, change.
Oh, okay, okay. So I have to look at the definition.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. It's on number three. Okay.
And Adele's example is almost word for word what the definition of development is in the code.
Yeah, she.
Did you guys already go over that while I was talking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I just think that it could be construed as development.
See, and I think like where it says to improved or unimproved, contemplating if you're already improved, it's going to be a man-made change to that which is already improved.
Okay.
Meaning, you don't pay the SDC.
Okay. Is there a motion to adopt the resolution 2011-08? A resolution approving in principle the general methodology described in the SDC mitigation concept document. You did that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I made
the
question.
Oh, we're in the question then.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
the
motion.
Well, long time out here tonight.
Yeah. Sorry.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Mayor says aye. All those opposed? Passes unanimously. Are there any other matters?
Nope.
Public comments at this point?
Lori Fleming, Forest Drive. I just would like to say how happy I am that the charter passed.
Yes.
Really, you know, a lot of hard work went into that, and I'm really glad that it made it.
82% basically. Yeah. That's yeah. What's good. That shows you good.
Yes.
That's excellent.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank the council for adopting the ordinance. It said it was a long time coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of work done, and it puts a closure on that in my mind. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you for
thank
your work.
You.
Thank you.
For those years in the trenches.
Really, 15 minutes and
gone. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All those in favor, aye, we're adjourned.
Thank you, staff.
Thank you.